Martin Sheen humming.
Hey guys, this is Dennis Kang.
Hey, this is Rashad Evans.
Diamond Salivary.
Hey everybody, this is Joe L.T.J. Dirksen.
Hey guys, this is Jason Nancy McDonald.
Hey everybody, you are listening to the world's most handsome fighter on the planet. Yes, this is Al Wapo, and you are listening to Full Contact Fighter Radio with Kelsey Mowat.
It is Full Contact Fighter Radio time once again, and I am your host, Kelsey Mowat. Thank you for tuning into the show. Mr. Brendan Lear coming to us live from Edmonton, Alberta. Brendan, how are you doing?
Good evening, Kelsey. I'm very well. How are you?
I'm doing very well, actually. I had a nice weekend out of town. Was on a one-night cruise. Enjoyed myself immensely. I had to watch UFC 63 on the repeat, which actually worked out not too bad. I was kind of groggy when I watched it early the next morning, but I had a good weekend.
That's a long way for a one-day trip, all the way to the Galapagos Islands.
Yeah, it was pretty crazy, you know. I took a charter flight.
How do those big sea turtles taste?
Good. A little salty. Could have used a little steak, a little surfing turf.
Being yeah, that's Canadian. An interesting concept, the Charles Darwin cruise.
Yes.
Very interesting.
Yeah, Brennan's pulling that out of his rear end, actually. Seattle for a function, which was a good time. But what did you think of the fights, man? We'll get into it a little bit more after we talk to some people on the show here, but what did you think of the fights overall?
Well, being the kind of homer that I am, I was a little bit disappointed in a couple fights, but overall I was pleasantly surprised, and my theory about the undercard lightweight fights is playing out, that you're guaranteed that that fights at 155 on the undercard are going to have some crazy highlights. You can actually fill in pay-per-view, and you don't have to fall back on some potentially poorer fights at heavier weights. So I think the UFC is sort of dialing in an interesting formula, but we can certainly talk about that later on.
Yeah, well, one of those lightweights that fought that night, and I don't know how many people out there saw his fight because it wasn't on the pay-per-view portion, but George Gurgel is going to be on the show. He defeated Daddy Abadi that night, so he'll be on the show, and we're looking forward to talking to him. And then also we've got Jesse Bongfeld, who's a Canadian welterweight. He's fighting in Rumble in the Cage in Lethbridge this weekend against Alma Waterhead for the Rumble in the Cage welterweight championship. So he'll be on the show joining us as well.
And I guess before we get started, we should pay respect to the death of Shelby Walker.
Yes.
She was a famous MMA fighter and a professional boxer. And I believe the fiance of a friend of ours, Dennis Kang. So deepest sympathies to Shelby's family and her friends at American Top Team and her friends in the mixed martial arts circles.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. That's tragic news, and we wish Dennis and Shelby's family all the best in this time. And all the best here from Full Contact Fighter.
Cage Fury Fighting Championship is coming to Atlantic City Friday, October 6th. This event guarantees non-stop action and a special appearance by Frank Shamrock. The excitement starts the day before at the weigh-in pre-party at the 4040 Club. Don't miss all the excitement. Tickets on sale now at Ticketmaster.com or CageFuryFighting.com.
Have you subscribed to Full Contact Fighter? FCF is the undefeated, no-holds-barred news source of the world, and no avid MMA fan should ever miss an issue. For years now, FCF has been providing MMA enthusiasts in-depth coverage of the world's greatest sport. Each issue contains event reports and photos from across the globe, including coverage from Japan, Brazil, Britain, Canada, and the United States. From fighter bios, technical advice, to training tips, FCF is the only publication that brings you all the MMA coverage you need every month, 12 times a year. Check out www.fcfighter.com for subscription information or call 516-676-0033. Full Contact Fighter, the undefeated, no-holds-barred news source of the world.
Hey guys, this is Jason Anthony McDonald, and you're listening to Full Contact Fighter Radio with Kelsey Mowat.
Welcome back to Full Contact Fighter Radio, and joining us now, live from his car, is Mr. George Gurgel. How are you doing?
This is me. How are you guys doing?
We're doing pretty well, and George, you're just coming back from the doctor's office, and I know that you wouldn't have the final results on your test, but on your knee. But did the doctor give you any kind of insight onto what the extent of the damage is to your knee?
No, I just got done with my MRI. I won't get too happy or too sad before I get the result. My family doctor, my personal doctor, went with me and read it. See, for sure, it's nothing major. He can almost guarantee. but the official results from the orthopedic surgeon comes tomorrow at 10 a.m.
Okay.
Tomorrow at 10 a.m., they're suspecting a lateral meniscus tear, and if that's it, I'll be walking and training already 2 to 3 weeks, so I'm hoping for that. That'll be great.
George is coming off a split decision victory over Danny Abadi. At,
it was unanimous, my friend. They changed the card immediately. They should have been changing the side already.
Oh, really?
As soon as I went back, Big John McCarthy came back to the locker room and told me to apologize. They messed up Cecil People's card, and the official result, it was unanimous decision.
Oh, okay. Well, that I hadn't heard that, and that makes sense because I watched the fight today, George. We're up here in Canada, and I watched it from via UFC On Demand, and I was quite stunned that it could even be... You know, anyone can see it as a split decision, so that makes sense.
I know. I'm extremely disappointed. Like I said, I'm happy in one way, but I'm very disappointed with the performance. It's just another thing for the people to see me fight with an injury, but it's something for me that I see as a test to myself. Nobody really knew what I had to go through, you know, tape up that knee and make sure that wouldn't pop again at the fight. And I knew I was going to, and I exploded during the fight, and I fought through it. So if they want to criticize me for that, that's fine. I just for me, it's not an obstacle that I overcame.
Mm-hmm. So, George, was this an injury that you had sustained in training before?
No, it was
the fight.
It really tore off during the fight. I felt unstable the day before. The day before, right before I weighed in, I was trying to cut some weight, and the workout room has those mats that have splits in the middle. Those are the fold-out zebra mats instead of one single mat. I stuck my toe there, scrambling with Rich. And my knee just tweaked it a little, and it started feeling unstable. Doctor cleared me. I was cleared to fight. During the fight, as soon as I threw my very first kick of the right leg, that's why I have my right knee taped.
Yeah.
If you pay attention. I have taped it real tight to make sure it wouldn't get out of place again. But as soon as I threw my first kick, it buckled again. And you can clearly see during the fight two more times where it buckles. It popped three times during the fight. That's why now it's really black and blue and swollen. But I could still get up, and I could still fight, and it wasn't as bad. I know it wasn't as bad as when I had to go to the Ultimate Fighter TV show.
And is this the same knee that's haunting you?
No, this is my good one. That's not the good one anymore. Now it's the bad one. That's my good, my good right knee, man. It's just my luck. I didn't do anything crazy. It just tweaked it, and then in the fight, I thought it was going to pop, and it just exploded. Be all right. I should be okay.
You mentioned that you tweaked it the day before. So what did that do to your game plan going in, George? Did you kind of stick with it and just see how?
Yeah, I have an extra funny story because as soon as it happened, I don't want to tell the guys the extent, you know, how bad it is or how I feel. I gotta believe that I don't know. I cannot make myself pull out of a fight. You know,
yeah.
I think that I fought before with the knee hurt, and I didn't make adjustments and I lost a decision. And I think that this time it's just another test. Okay, you're gonna fight with the knee hurt again. Let's see if they can be smart enough to make some changes and decisions and just toughen it out and come out with a victory this time. And I decided to do that. I couldn't bear the thought of going 3 more months and not get to fight again because of another injury. I just wanted to fight and I fought. That's what happened. And you can't take it like this, man. You gotta do it. You gotta take it positive. I couldn't do much. I performed horribly towards the fight. My wrestling looked like crap. You know, I hated it because I couldn't post. My kick started slowing down. I just stopped kicking after the second round, and I just started sitting on my feet in box, and it affected my head movement. But like I said, the decision was to tape it up, suck it up, and scrap. That's what I did.
I was just gonna ask you about the Mark Hominick fight. I know that after that fight, you had talked openly about your disappointment in the fight, and you thought that you'd perhaps won that fight. What was the status of your knee by the end of that fight? Had it been re-agitated?
No. The Marcus Hominick, I felt healthy.
Okay.
The Marcus Hominick fight, I never complained about anything. My left knee, the one that's been almost reconstructed, partially, is 100%. It's great.
Mm-hmm.
I can do anything with it. This is a brand new injury with the body. It just popped and it buckled and it felt just like pure deja vu. It was my right knee. My left knee is fine. And when I fought Mark Hominick, both of my knees were healthy. My body was healthy during that fight. Nothing, my knee was fine.
Did you think you had won that fight, George, against Mark?
Yeah, well, I believe the whole entire time in my little head, like I said in the interviews, that I was winning. I felt like he never hurt me. He never did hurt me for 1 second. And when he swept me, he grabbed my leg and swept me. It was because I was trying to kick him, pursue the action. And after he swept me, put me on the ground, he never pursued the action. He turned right back around and made me stand up again. So He didn't fight to win the fight. He didn't fight to really finish the fight. He fought a fight not to lose. And I told him, I rocked him, and I had to chase him. Now, at least in the UFC, they changed the rule. If you see when Hermes Franca fought his last fight, Varner turned around for a half a second, and Jerry McCarthy automatically lost the point of the round. So here's what I think. I did not beat him that night, but he definitely did not beat me either.
Would you like maybe another fight with him?
Eventually. It's not on my priority list. I knew eventually going to fight again. But I know that Mark knows that he did not beat me that fight. Everybody knows. Otherwise, I wouldn't gotten millions and millions of phone calls telling me how much I got robbed. And I believe that I did better in that fight. But, you know, it's the judge's decision to me is just an opinion. And I'm not a sort of loser. If I had got dominated or beaten, I would have given him a lot of props and tell him good job. But he did not beat me that fight.
George, is it a sacrifice to tape up your knee? Does that affect your flexibility and your jiu-jitsu on the ground?
Right now, not anymore. I recuperated 100% where my flexibility is back 100%. Everything in this knee, it's just like I said, it's a brand knee. It's flexible. It doesn't get sore anymore. I really got blessed with a surgery. Dr. Sanders in Las Vegas is unbelievable. And this other knee, I think it's just, it's not half as serious, and I should be healthy 100% very soon. I really believe that.
George, a lot of people have always made note of the fact of your Brazilian jiu-jitsu capabilities, black belt, an instructor, you have your own team, etc. But now you've gone up against a couple strikers recently and displayed excellent stand-up skills. Do you still feel that people underestimate your stand-up skills, George?
No, I know. That's a funny question. Joe Silva tells me all the time at the UFC, too, in Dana. Next time I win, or knock somebody out, do something, I'll be like this. I promise I'm better on the ground, I promise. So people can just get a laugh out of it. I just enjoy fighting standing, and I don't think that's the other people underestimate my stand-up. They're just afraid of going to the ground because the public saw my grappling tournaments or saw me grappling, and they don't want to grapple. So they probably know my stand-up is good, but they definitely don't want to go to the ground, so I know everybody's going to try to keep standing. But one day, somebody's going to be okay with going to the ground, then I can show what I can do on the ground.
Fair enough.
I was going to ask, were you nervous coming into this fight because you were certainly a heavy favorite, and you had those sort of controversial, awkward-looking fights in the UFC before, so there was a lot of pressure on you to win this fight and to look good. Does that affect your preparation even more, knowing that everyone assumes that you're going to beat your opponent? And Danny came off the reality show like you, but he was portrayed in the show, whether that was true or not, as probably one of the weaker fighters there. Now, he was coming down two weight classes, so there were a lot of unknowns for you. Does that throw off your preparation or give you more anxiety?
Not anxiety. I tell exactly what happened. And then when you get fights like this, which everything you said is completely true, I'm supposed to be the favorite. As far as you talk about, I don't believe he's nearly my level. And if he was one of the top contenders, I would totally give somebody props. I'm just being honest. That's why I'm so disappointed with the way I performed, even though I was injured, hurt, because I don't think that anybody really is in the UFC level. He needs more experience. He needs to train on the ground. His jiu-jitsu, I heard, is just not good at all. I don't think he's that same desire yet. He doesn't mature yet and understand the sacrifice that he has to make to be a fighter. So I have a lot of blame on myself right now, and I have a lot of grief, and going back to the drawing board and try to improve even more, because I did not perform the way I expected, my own expectations. I won, and it's great, and I'm grateful, but it's not enough for me. I expected to put on a show. I was a heavy, heavy favorite, and I want to make sure that I proved the point and made a statement, and I didn't. I just walked out of the win, and I'm not happy about that.
Well, I mean, hopefully you get your test results back and cleared to fight soon, and then you can return to action healthy. What, I think your next biggest goal outside of your own career, I guess, would be helping Rich Franklin continue to get ready for his upcoming fight with Anderson Silva.
Yeah.
And Rich has kind of been remaining out of the limelight a little bit. I think people will be really curious to know, how is his training coming along, and how are his hands healed up?
Now we have a deal. Rich, I couldn't ask for a better friend, to be honest with you guys. He does everything I needed before my fight, even though he's training for his fight. He went out there, rented a car when I needed to eat, grabbed everything to help me cut weight. He's always there, so supportive. And like I said, right now, the whole team is 100% The priority right now is get Rich ready. He's in shape. He's already ahead of schedule when it comes to dropping a little bit of weight. He's lean. His hand is perfectly healed. He's taking the fight, you know, just like any other fight, the most important fight of his life. He's got a good mindset. He's in the right place. I don't think Anderson's going to be able to handle it. I think the longer the fight goes, the longer Rich is going to grow. He's doing everything right, and I hope to see a good Rich Franklin fight again.
How familiar, North American fans, many North American fans aren't particularly familiar with Anderson Silva. How familiar are you with him, and how has that affected your preparation for this big fight coming up?
Very, very. I've always watched it. I'm an Anderson Silva fan. You know, I saw when he started the training, I used to watch his fights back in Brazil. I followed him ever since he went to Pride, and he made a bunch of good decisions as far as his training, and his game is very complete. He's a very unorthodox striker that likes to stand southpaw in convention, so you never know what kind of a jab stance he's going to take. He's very accurate, you know, likes to throw high kicks, and very good at jiu-jitsu off his back. He's very good with omoplatas, flexible, triangles, omoplatas, sets up his open guard really well. So actually, from the bottom, he's dangerous. The submissions are good. I don't think he's got very much power, and I don't think his conditioning and is up to par as far as compared to Rich Franklin. Rich is bigger, Rich is stronger, and I think this is going to be a huge factor as wear Anderson Silva down. You know, we're playing every scenario possible to make sure we have a good strategy going in for this fight. This can tell you what it is, obviously.
Well, yeah, I was going to say that was leads into my next question. I understand that you might not want to discuss your game plan with Rich for this fight.
But he's just a good striker, you know. We don't believe he's very strong. Very good submissions, very flexible. But again, lacks the power and lacks the conditioning. And we're going to work around that like we always do.
Brennan, do you have anything else for George?
No, George. We hope to see you fight again soon, though, and see you. You seem to have, and this is good, you seem to have as high expectations of yourself as everyone else has had of you both going into the show and in your recent fights. So I wish that you are able to fulfill your potential for everyone sometimes very soon.
That means a lot to me, man. I really appreciate what you said. Thank you very much, and I will.
Okay, well, enjoy your dinner, George, and we'll talk to you soon.
Thanks a lot for the opportunity, guys. You guys have a good night. If you need anything, give me a call, okay?
Okay, take care.
Bye-bye.
Some things are worth fighting for. 14 American mixed martial artists will battle in the jungles of Costa Rica. 7 will earn the right to fight the Russian Red Devil Team in front of the world, live on pay-per-view. Only they know what this fight means to them, and they'll get their chance to prove it on Bodog Fight. The fight begins September 19th. Check local listings or visit bodogfight.com for more details.
You don't have to be a champion to dress like one. With the Full Contact Fighter Shop, we have all the MMA gear that you see so many of your favorite professional fighters wearing. NHB Extreme Fight Shorts, Camouflage Board Shorts, Corduroy and Camo Hats, Hooded Sweatshirts, to the classic FCF T-shirts, Full Contact Fighter Clothing is the number one mixed martial arts brand that any MMA fan must have. Now open is the FCF Sticker and Banner Shop. We have all your favorite IFL team clothing, plus a great assortment of low-priced Pride and MMA DVDs are now all available at the FCF Shop. To check it out, head to www.fcfighter.com, pick up the latest edition of the FCF paper, or call 516-676-0033. That number, again, 516-676-0033. Full Contact Fighter. The undefeated, no-holds-barred new source of the world. Joining us now from Lethbridge, Alberta, is Mr. Jesse Bomfeld, who's going to be taking on Elmer Waterhand for the Rumble in the Cage Welterweight Championship this Saturday night. Jesse, how are you doing today?
I'm doing great. Getting pumped. Training away here.
Yeah, I was going to say, we caught you. It sounds like you've been, heavy training. How is the training coming along? And, you know, for such an active fighter like yourself, you're already got over 20 fights in your career. You know, how do you balance fighting, you know, at such an often pace, on such a regular interval?
Well, I guess the main thing is definitely injury prevention, and that is definitely in the diet, lots of protein and muscle recovery type of things. Like, I've been taking Endothil it's an herbal supplement for muscle recovery, and just lots and lots of food, so I always have something to keep me going, you know?
Yeah. Maybe for some of the people who aren't familiar with the mixed martial arts scene in Lethbridge, you're training right now at the Canadian Martial Arts Center. You just had Jason Day fighting for the MFC light heavyweight title. He lost to Victor Belamaki last week. But who are some of the other notable fighters that Canadian mixed martial arts fans might recognize that train out of your gym?
Oh, Tim Tamaki's been giving her. He's Fighter of the Year last year for CMMAC. And he just doesn't stop. The kid never gets hurt. He's got almost as many fights as I do, and he's only been stopped, like, armbarred once. Every other fight is either he's finished or he's gone the distance. And then we got Tavernini here. He's giving her, training away every day. He's hitting his pads. Boy doesn't stop either. He's one of the vets from this gym. He's, we got a lot of new up-and-comers. I think we got one of the biggest gyms in Canada right now. And these fellas, they just keep coming in. And this gym is growing exponentially. It's great. Lots of new guys to work with.
We'll get back to the Lethbridge mixed martial arts scene, because I want to ask you about that in a little bit here, because it is quite remarkable considering how small the city is. But first, let's get back to the fight with Waterhand. You know, Elmer's one of those guys. He doesn't have as many fights as you do, but he's been pretty active regularly as well. He had a big win over Tim Thurston recently in King of the Cage, and then he just lost to Chris Aid. Against a guy like Elmer, Jesse, what do you know about him, and what's your game plan going in?
Well, my game plan is probably the same as it's been my last bunch of fights, is just not get hit. It's worked out pretty good for me as far as getting position, taking a guy down, and trying to just work for a finish from there and setting it up with heavy-handed strikes. It's been pretty consistent for me, that strategy. Of course, it's always nice to be able to impress the crowd and stand there and trade a bit, and if, you know, or not even trade, just stay on the feet, which is a range that Elmer's really been successful in. And the boy's knees are incredible. He's knocked out some good fellas, and I'm going to avoid that. It's definitely not going to be the area where I want to mix it up with him. So I know he does actually have quite a bit of experience, and I'm not underestimating him by any means. He's a great fighter, and I've seen him fight many times and always enjoyed his fights, so be pretty action-packed.
For yourself, what kind of background do you have in mixed martial arts? I know, you know, I've read some interviews in the past where you talked about you had done some training in Jeet Kune Do, and a lot of you guys at the CMMC do a lot of Muay Thai training. Of course, you got a jiu-jitsu background, but where do you feel that you as a fighter is most comfortable, Jesse?
Most comfortable? Well, traditionally, I started out doing judo when I was just a baby, and karate has always been part of my background, so those traditional martial arts come into play, and I've always been comfortable in both phases of fighting, like stand-up and ground, but the thing that's brought me to my next level has definitely been my wrestling over the last couple of years, and the Muay Thai has just brought a simplicity to my stand-up game, and the wrestling has brought a simplicity to my ground and jiu-jitsu game, just trying to stay on top, and as far as ground and wrestling goes, and just trying to work simple left side, right side combinations as far as striking goes. It just makes the game so much easier with that basic style, the wrestling and the Muay Thai. And I, of course, appreciate and give all credit due to the traditional martial arts, but definitely the next level for me was with the Muay Thai and wrestling.
Now, you're a guy who's, you know, been in the ring with several Western Canadian mixed martial arts veterans. Garrett Davis comes to mind. Most recently, Jason St. Louis, who you beat with Triangle Choke. That fight finally came about. I mean, for those people who maybe don't follow the scene so intensely, how many times were you guys actually scheduled to fight, you and Jason St. Louis?
I think it was four times.
Yeah.
It just kept falling through. We both got in a car accident when we were supposed to fight for the King of the Cage Canadian title. That was very strange. I mean, kind of thing doesn't happen every day. I had a lot of fights fall out on me, though, and that's just the nature of the game, and a lot of guys get hurt during training.
Now, what was it like for you to finally fight a veteran like Jason? He's an old-school veteran back to, you know, the old TKO days before he's even called TKO. What was it like to get that win finally and finally fight Jason? Was it what you expected?
Well, I've always looked up to the guy, and he's always, you know, sort of inspired me to train a little harder. I mean, I watched the guy several times when I was younger, and that was just when I was getting into it, and he was pretty much the top dog at the time. So, judging by the three fights before that, I kind of knew what I wanted to do. I wanted to get him in the rear naked, which is, or get on top and finish him with strikes, of course. And that is what happened. So it was so relieving. I mean, he was one of the top dogs, and I wanted to put myself in the top slot in the country. I'm getting up there. That beating St. Louis is definitely a big stepping stone for that goal.
Now, you're on a four-fight win streak coming into this weekend's fight against Waterhead. What do you attribute that to, Jesse? Do you do anything differently, or is it just the way the fights have unfolded?
Oh, my diet has helped me a huge amount. For a while there, I tried the acid alkaline diet, was eating mainly greens, and my body weakened, and I didn't gain the weight that I wanted to gain. So having the diet and extra weight, and then I've been, you know, using the old cut-and-weight technique, so that helps. That's definitely made a huge strength advantage in a lot of my last fights.
Yeah. Getting back to Lethbridge, I mean, that's where you train and you live, and of course, Rumble the Cage is going to be held in Lethbridge. For those people who aren't familiar with the mixed martial arts community there, and the fact that Lethbridge is a fairly small city, it's only about 70,000, and yet you have a lot of fighters coming out of there, events held on a regular basis. What do you attribute that to, Jesse? Why is it that Lethbridge is such a mixed martial arts hotbed, considering it's a really small city?
Oh, I don't know. It's got to be something to do with all the small little towns that are around here. Like, these guys, you know, they're all farming communities, and they're all gung-ho and full of testosterone, so they come into the city, and they just want to see some good scraps, I guess. But as far as our gym growing the way it has, I definitely attribute that to my coaches, Lee Mann here. He's put together a wonderful facility. We got all sorts of new gear and new mats and cage. It's just gorgeous, and people come in and see this, and they want to be a part of it.
Now, you were formerly part of Progressive Fighting Academy, which is also in Lethbridge. Is that now been sort of amalgamated into Canadian Martial Arts Center, or what exactly happened there?
4 years ago when I first moved here from Ontario, it was actually Means Mixed Martial Arts and Progressive Fighting Academy still had existed at the time, but they amalgamated back then, and now they're two separate schools again. They just have different focuses. Progressive Fighting Academy is definitely working on their stand-up Muay Thai, kickboxing type of thing. And we're more focused on the mix.
Well, Jesse, we appreciate you taking some time out of your busy training schedule, and best of luck this weekend. Rumble in the Cage, it's Saturday night, September 30th. Jesse's taking on Elmer Waterhead for the Rumble in the Cage welterweight championship. And Jesse, all the best, man.
I appreciate it. Thanks a lot.
Okay, take care.
Take care.
Cage Fury Fighting Championship is coming to Atlantic City Friday, October 6th. This event guarantees non-stop action and a special appearance by Frank Shamrock. The excitement starts the day before at the weigh-in pre-party at the 4040 Club. Don't miss all the excitement. Tickets on sale now at Ticketmaster.com or CageFuryFighting.com.
You're listening to the Full Contact Fighter Radio Network. And now, from his upscale 300-square-foot igloo in the trendy Icefield District of Vancouver, British Columbia, he knows what he's talking about. Here's your host, Kelsey Mowat.
Welcome back to Full Contact Fighter Radio, and as we wrap up we'll wrap it up in a few minutes here. You have to listen to our nauseating voices and poor opinions on UFC 63. Brendan, it is our 20th show that we're going to be finishing off here. How about that?
I would say in the history of the internet, probably one of the more remarkable feats since its inception in the mind of Al Gore in 1980.
Yeah, I would, definitely along there. Maybe the Miracle on Ice, 1980, comparable.
Was that on the internet, Kelsey?
Well, no, but I was thinking of miraculous events that, you know.
I would think you have the birth of the internet, then you have pornography, and then basically our 20th show, and then that's it. It's all downhill from there. Like MySpace, you know, a distant fourth.
Well, some interesting comments from George Gugel on his fight. Did you get a chance to see the fight, Brennan?
I didn't get a chance to see that fight. So tell us a little bit about it, because his fights always seem to have kind of a wonky pace. And like I said, I think he's got a lot of potential, because in terms of Brazilian black belt or Brazilian jiu-jitsu black belts, he's actually a really flashy fighter. So everyone is expecting him to be the kind of next big thing. And he almost seems to either have some
some bum luck or just have weird looking fights, you know. I'm thinking back to the his Hominick fight. So I don't know, what did the fight look like to you?
Well, it was a pretty entertaining fight. There was a few minutes of it that were somewhat sluggish, and Abadi was backpedaling a little bit. I, of course, like I mentioned in the interview, watched UFC On Demand because it wasn't shown on the pay-per-view fight, and I knew I'd be talking to George today. I wanted to see it. And it was an entertaining fight. You couldn't really tell off the bat that George's knee was bothering him too much. A few times you could see that he didn't have the ability to put a lot of weight or strength behind certain angles of his punches, depending on what kind of punch he was throwing. To be honest, I think the one kind of hole in George's game, and Mike Goldberg made mention of this, and whether or not it's accurate, I'm not sure, but Mike Goldberg had made some comment about George Gurgel not working too much on his wrestling, that it's a part of his game, that he mostly concentrates on striking now, rather than, the jiu-jitsu, etc.
Well, did this fight go to the ground?
It did, only a couple times. Early in the first, Gurgel actually went for a flying armbar off the clinch, and it wound up on the mat, and George was extremely active from his guard, punching, elbowing, Abadi didn't really do anything. A couple times it looked like George might go for Uma Plata from his rubber guard, but nothing too much materialized. George only went for a couple takedowns, and I know in the interview he mentioned that he felt his knee was really bothering him on his shot, so that it took away his shot, which, would make sense. It seemed like against Hominick, his setup for his shots weren't as successful either, but, if you've got a bum knee, that's definitely one part of your game that's going to be really hampered. With Abadi, who had the reach advantage, he was pretty hesitant, didn't really do a lot of punching. It was kind of reminded me a little bit of the Johnny Alessio Diego Sanchez fight, except for the fact that Gurgel was throwing a lot more at Abadi, but it was kind of the same game plan as Alessio. Abadi sort of stepped back, would throw a jab, catch George occasionally. George was catching Abadi with a left hook quite a bit throughout the fight, and that might have been actually the deciding factor in it. A couple times Abadi caught him coming in, used the right uppercut fairly well. But, like I said in the interview with George, I was surprised that someone had the fight going Abadi's way. There was maybe in the second round you could say that Abadi had come away with that round, but, and obviously all the judges probably thought that as well, 28-9, 28 scores. But yeah, to give two rounds to Abadi, like some of us thought when it was announced, a split decision victory, it just didn't seem right to me. So that makes sense that he was awarded the win.
So it was, and it was found out. I actually read today that it was a mistake after that. Someone, either Cecil Peoples or someone who was tabulating, buggered up on the card, and then he actually did get the unanimous decision.
Right. Yeah. So, I think all in all, George, and I think you may comment on this too, that he's being pretty hard on himself. There was a lot of pressure for him coming in against someone like Abadi who has not been, compared in the same circles as a Mark Hominick or George Gurgel, and it was a heavy, heavy favorite. There's been such high expectations for George. And considering that, he's done this to his knee and he was, getting tests today and he might not even be able to train for another 3 weeks, I think considering all that, his performance was pretty... It was pretty solid, and furthermore, like I asked him about his stand-up capabilities, against Mark Hominick, I think he surprised a lot of people, and then you've got a guy like Abadi who's, I think, got a record of 14-3 in kickboxing fights, etc. You gave up the reach to Hominick and Abadi, and to do this well standing with a bum knee, I think he's being pretty tough on himself.
I would say that, as well, and he has definitely shown some pretty impressive stand-up against courage to stand up against fighters who he would obviously have a vested interest in taking down.
Yeah, the next fight I wanted to talk about was Rashad Evans versus Jason Lambert, and I should mention beforehand that you and I both picked, going through this pick war that we've got going on, we both picked Gurgel to win. The next fight that we looked at that I want to talk about is Rashad Evans versus Jason Lambert. Rashad Evans coming with the win that you and I both picked as well. And then, Rashad looked damn impressive in that fight.
I think if you wanted to pick out one fight of the night that demonstrated a fighter's clear dominance, it had to be Rashad. And I don't know what was going on with Lambert that night, but he certainly Evans made him look like a pretty average fighter, and we know and a lot of us have good intuitions that he's not an average fighter. So I think that's more props to Rashad. And I have to say, my opinion of Rashad has really turned, come full circle from the show till now. You know, I think he's the talk of him being the next big thing at light heavyweight is maybe not too premature. You know, given a year, given 2 years, perhaps.
Well, his wrestling has always been unbelievable, and, you know, he demonstrated that against Lambert. The key to this fight was his ability to pass the guard, which he, for whatever reason, I know, you know, he's discussed various reasons against Stephen Bonner. He, you know, had said that he just didn't feel comfortable trying to go through the guard and get out of Bonner's guard and exposing himself. But, you know, this just shows that the huge advantage of passing the guard. And, man, that stoppage, and I know some people are talking about this on the forums, etc., that was a little dicey. I mean, you know.
I thought that there are a couple stoppages like that as well. And, you know, that was the first one on the card that people were going, aye, 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 and sort of, you notice when people who are watching with you can sort of count numerous blows that are sort of inappropriate after a fighter's clearly done. I think there was like 6 or 8 blows to Lambert before, you know, when he was clearly in deep, deep trouble. So,
yeah, I mean, normally McCarthy, I believe that was McCarthy, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, normally he's really good. He's one of the best at, you know, giving the fighters that extra second to recover or to show something, and I've always appreciated that from McCarthy. But that fight, yeah, I mean, there was one side angle I remember kind of looking at, and I can only guess and speculate, but it looked like Lambert was somewhat looking at McCarthy, and I think he mistook that for consciousness or some kind of awareness, and his eyes, you know, were really glazed, but he was just, I think, by chance sort of looking at McCarthy, and I don't know if he was out or not, but I think, because it kind of looked like McCarthy took a step in and then took a step back, and then Rashad landed, yeah, like 5 or 6 more punches, and then it was finally stopped, and thankfully, you know, Jason's appeared fine after the fight.
Yeah, thankfully, and as impressive as that fight was, it was kind of an awkward ending, and I think, you know, even Rashad got a little bit of a sense of that as well, and that must be tough because it's the fighter's responsibility to keep on going aggressively, literally, till they're physically stopped. So, good thing that he was okay, and who knows? I think we'll see Lambert back again. And to be quite honest, you know, I'm not a big fan of this critique, but Lambert looked he looks big and he looks still fairly bulky at 205. You know,
yeah.
And I wouldn't be surprised if he could if he couldn't go down actually one more weight class. That wouldn't surprise me in the least.
Yeah, I mean that's. Yeah, I guess I shouldn't say no. I mean, when you look at guys like Joe Riggs doing it, then why not? You know, this, I think, really has to entrench Rashad's place in the contender list at light heavyweight. And if it doesn't, then in certain people's minds, and I'm not really sure what they're watching, I'm not saying that he should have a title shot right away, but I would like to see him thrown up against, you know, someone like a Forrest Griffin. And, you know, basically, I think Rashad is one big win away from getting a title shot.
Yeah, I think if there's anything that's obviously missing in his game, it's maybe some aggression in his stand-up that can set up those brilliant takedowns. And certainly he's not, he's not apprehensive about taking people down, but if you have someone with really decent takedown defense, like the obvious person that pops into mind, Chuck Liddell, I think Rashad is going to need a little bit more of an aggressive stand-up style to set up those takedowns where he can do his most effective work. If there are any obvious holes in his game, I think that might be one of them. He seems to be a little bit, and I don't want to say uncomfortable on his feet, because he's certainly not uncomfortable, but he has a defensive boxing style which I think doesn't lend to setting up the takedown in the way that. In the seemingly now insurmountable task of defeating the man who has dialed in that very effective style.
Next one I want to talk about is Joe Lauzon versus Jens Pulver, and both you and I were wrong on this, and I think the great majority of the world was as well, you know, except for for some of the people who probably knew a little bit more about Joe Lauzon than I, perhaps I did. But, I mean, really, how many people would expect, you know, a veteran and the former UFC champ to lose to Lauzon? But, you know, props to him. Unbelievable performance. 48 seconds knocking out Jens. And it'll be interesting to see how, you know, no one's going to take him lightly anymore. Not saying that Jens did, but yeah, there'll definitely be higher expectations on Lauzon next time around.
If I think, Kelsey, if anything, this demonstrates what I was talking about when I said when I made these comments about BJ Penn and that his last show, and that is in lightweight and the lightweights and the welterweights, and I think to a lesser extent in the middleweights, you know, there is no big there is no clear distinction in skill between number one and two and number maybe four and five and six. And I think we've seen this all year, and we've seen this now. We've seen this with Takanori Gomi. We've seen this with Yves Edwards. We've seen this with a lot of, and now Jens Pulver, a lot of veterans who because of their reputation, believe they had a lock. And these up-and-coming young guys come out of nowhere, and they got the game. You know, they got the game to get it done. So that's one of the things I think is so exciting about 155 and 170 right now, is you're going to see these guys coming out of nowhere and challenging for titles in very short amounts of time.
Another fight that we were dead wrong on was Melvin Guillard versus Gabe Rudiger, and it did look at one point, I don't believe it was, I think it was near the end of the first, or maybe it was early in the second, I can't. Well, it must have been near the end of the first, where Gabe Rudiger actually, you know, got Guillard's back momentarily.
When our picks started falling apart, I was really cheering for that to happen, because I know he wasn't going to be able to do it again in the second.
Yeah, it was Guillard. That guy is just a machine. I mean, he was just so obviously, you know, twice as strong as Rudiger. Just threw him around, his takedown attempts, just to toss him aside. He just looked extremely powerful and strong. Compared to Gabe, who, you know, maybe looked like he could even go down to 145. But in saying that, you know, Rudiger showed a lot of heart and a lot of determination and almost, you know, pulled the fight out.
Yeah, I think he didn't look particularly crisp in that fight, and surprisingly he almost seemed to gas. I think certainly at the end of the second he was susceptible, and certainly that he wasn't prepared for that the two body shots that he took, and I was kind of surprised about that. And but again, nothing taken away from Guillard. Brilliant fight. The body shots were great. They were great looking. And again, the only obvious game was a little bit of ground defense. He was mounted almost immediately after he was taken down and looked to be in some trouble. If he can patch that up, I think you're looking at a guy with some skills that can take him a long way.
Yeah, sorry, buddy, if it was cutting out there a bit on you. Someone's calling me on the other line, so I apologize to the listeners for that annoying sound that they're going to hear. The next fight that I think a lot of Canadians in particular were excited about, and everyone that follows the UFC, between two guys with, you know, very highly noted for their stand-up skills, David Loazzo and Mike Swick. And Brendan, buddy, this is the one where I edged you, tying the great race between the two of us. And I went with Swick, and you went with Loazzo. And it looks like I get the win here, buddy.
Oh, how the mighty have fallen.
Yes. But, you know, in all seriousness, I know a lot of people are discussing the fact on what Loazzo's game plan was and why did he look so tentative, and if he had changed things up and been more aggressive, would things be different? And, of course, you know, I think it'd be stupid to say, you know, well, yeah, if he hadn't been, maybe if he had been more aggressive starting the second round, things could have been different. Who knows? I know his game plan was to, you know, try to get out of the first round, sit back maybe a little bit, and Swick is noted for being a fast starter, obviously, and coming with a quick win. But, yeah, certainly in the third round when he started to press, he had more success. But, you know, I think when people say that, when you look at the third round and what happened, you know, I think maybe people are taking a little bit too much away from Swick in the sense that, you know, there were some stand-up exchanges in the first and second rounds. And I think one of the reasons Loazzo was tentative is because Swick was winning them. And I think that Loaiza would have been better served to try going for the takedown earlier in the fight and put those elbows to work from the top position.
I was kind of right there with him in the first. I could sort of sense that he wasn't going to rush into anything. He didn't want to give Swick. He didn't want to play into that whole quick nickname, and he was kind of taking it easy. But at the same time, in the second, I got really antsy because you know if you lose two, and if you're the type of fighter that isn't really apprehensive about being taken down, which Loaiza isn't. You know, he doesn't aggressively defend takedowns, although he does it quite competently. Then you knew exactly what was going to happen, you know. And if Swick could take him down and ride it out after with two rounds under his belt, you know, props to him. He did a good job doing that. But you kind of wondered halfway through the second what on earth Loaiza was doing and whether or not that was going to, he would definitely have to win the fight. And he was in tough, you know, he was in tough doing it. And, you know, it looked good for a while, and Swick looked, Swick's inexperience, I think, showed that there was a little bit of terror on his face. Especially, you know, you got to love every time Loaiza hits someone with an elbow, they kind of have this instantaneous, oh my God, you know, am I gushing blood out of some, one of my orifices or a brand new orifice? But he got over that, and he got out of the round, and you know, props to him. I think Loaiza, I don't know, he claims to have been a little bit shell-shocked getting back in, but the slow start killed him, because I don't think he's the style of fighter that can, he's the style of fighter that can finish, but I don't think he's is defensive enough to avoid losing close rounds to a couple takedowns, which is basically exactly what happened.
Well, it reminded me against, was it Rivera, that he lost the decision against Rivera and looked somewhat tentative standing up and training with him. It was kind of the same thing.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and that was, right after that, he did end up dialing in his elbows. And again, I think his little trick has been discovered. And Swick was very, very apprehensive about staying on the ground in certain positions, and was very apprehensive about taking his back and having that reversed. So I guess it's an interesting position for Loaiza to be with, knowing that not many people are going to ride your back. But then again, you know, I think he's going to have to come up with something else to account for that now.
Yeah, well, it'll be interesting to see what the UFC does with Loaiza now. If they're going to try to make him a bit of like a gatekeeper to possible future title shots, or who they put him up against. I think with Swick asking for a title shot for himself is, you know, of course, as a fighter, you're going to want to do that. It's true. He's had tremendous success. He took out Loaiza and looked good doing it for two of the three rounds. I think, though, that if you watch that performance, I really can't see him competing against a Rich Franklin at this point yet, though.
No, I could, you know, I think, you know, someone like Lieben would be a great fight for either fighter now. You know, someone else who has had a loss and is recovering from some kind of adversity, because all those guys will, you know, the great thing about each of those fighters is that they're all good to watch. And, I think that's what's becoming more important to the UFC than simply win. You know, if you put on a good show, if you demonstrate your ability to stand and trade and put on and get, basically, it's one of those give the people what they want style of fights. And but then again, that being said, that was what this fight was supposed to be, and it didn't really turn out that way. So it was one of these great build-ups, and especially in my own mind, that was actually a fair bit disappointing.
Yeah, well, there's certainly a certain energy that surrounds Mike Swick, and then with some of the, you know, taunts and kind of the swagger that he carries himself with is certainly exciting and quite, you know, somewhat of a contrast to someone like a Rich Franklin, I would say. Not saying that he's bashful or arrogant in interviews. He's actually quite the opposite, but he certainly is fun to watch fight. Of course, next fight I want to talk about, as we're getting a little long here in the tooth, is Matt Hughes versus BJ Penn. We both picked Matt Hughes to win. We both, I think, picked him to win in sort of like a three or four round kind of fashion. But, I guess everyone's first reaction is today, or the last couple of days, is, you know, BJ Penn, if he'd been in shape, would he have won this fight?
Well, it's interesting to see, you know, because BJ's account is that he separated a rib, and I've actually had a similar injury, and it's pretty devastating because you really get, you know, it doesn't really feel, if you've never had the sensation before, it really feels like there's something else is going on, and it's not something like a separated rib, but, you know, like a cardiac arrest or something like that. So I can see that, I can see that as being a better explanation than him ruling Hughes for two rounds and then all of a sudden between rounds gassing out, because it's not like he went worn down in the third round. He came out in the third round and looked terrible.
Yeah.
So you know, and you know, put attempting to finish that triangle like he was, I know was taking up a great amount of energy, but at the same time, I think the injury does make a lot of sense. And
well, I know what you're saying. I guess with the separated rib, it kind of remains, I think, to be seen over the next few days. You know, what BJ's pen condition is, what it's determined to be. I don't know. It's hard to say. You know, I thought that he did look pretty tired even when he got up after second round. I know people are saying, you know, in defense that his rib was separated at that point, and that's why. But maybe it was a combination. Maybe he was having difficulties breathing. I'm not sure. Mm-hmm. But, you know, it's definitely a very impressive performance for Penn up until that point, irregardless of what happened. And, yeah, I thought it was interesting with George St. Pierre, that whole kerfuffle that happened afterwards. And, you know, I think George St. Pierre, whether or not you thought it was an appropriate time for him to say it, whether or not he was trying to hype up the fight, sell tickets, as Joe
Rogan. Well, did they have a teleprompter there? You know, it's...
Yeah.
It didn't seem like something that, you know, comes out of the mouth, that traditionally comes out of the mouth of George St. Pierre. So,
but it was a valid. I thought it was a valid point. You know, and they weren't going to get into specifics and allow him to elaborate on why he said that. And like I said, regardless if you think it was an appropriate time or not, it was a valid point, and one has to look back and say, well, what was the difference between George St. Pierre versus BJ Penn? Matt Hughes versus BJ Penn, and the glaring difference is George's ability to take BJ Penn down where Matt Hughes couldn't, and BJ Penn looked to be getting the better of the stand-up exchanges against George, and that's why I took it to the mat, and the same thing happened with BJ versus Matt Hughes. So, you know, I think that was, it's kind of a valid point by George St. Pierre. I mean, if you're Matt Hughes, you've got to look at it, you would think their camp has got to look, you know, kind of go back to the drawing board a little bit here and say, well, you know, if we're going up against George St. Pierre next, what is the game plan going to be? Where are we better? Is it going to be takedowns? I'm not so sure.
Well, I think that's something I think that if St. Pierre can overcome the fact that he's lost once to Hughes and have that same explosiveness and same, if he can be focused and dialed in and fight his best fight for two rounds. You know, I honestly think that Hughes is now has got to be a notorious slow starter. You know, you can't. There's no two ways about it. And if GSP can bring the heat and have that dialed in automatically and not have to work up to it, I see him having a great shot. You know, and I think his fitness is certainly going to be on par with Hughes, and I think he's a legitimate contender. But that being said, Hughes is the champ. He's beaten everyone, and the big question is, can he get up for yet again another big fight?
Well, and that's what I want to make clear here is I'm not, you know, talking about what George St. Pierre said about the performance not being impressive, and I think that's more of a testament to the actual raw athletic. And skills, athletic abilities and skills of BJ Penn. And Matt Hughes, I mean, it still remains that this guy has unbelievable mental resolve. He always comes into fights in shape. For the most part, there's been one or two exceptions, perhaps. But if you look at what happened against Frank Trigg, where he got hit with a low blow and was in some trouble, didn't quit, fought out of it. BJ Penn, he gets hit in the eye, which I know ironically happened to George St. Pierre against BJ Penn. You know, stuck with it. Was in a ton of trouble, still managed to come back. His takedowns, he was showing no ability to take him down, losing the stand-up exchanges. and the fact that he still, you know, had the mental capabilities to come out and finish in the dominant way that he did against BJ. You know, he is a great champion, and I want to make that clear. It's, you know, he is the champion for a reason.
Yep, and there's no doubt about it. And you know, the great thing about Hughes, regardless of what you think about him as his personality or his musical choice, his musical tastes, what he leaves on the mat, you know, and he's got a lot of W's behind his name and not too many losses. So there's no doubt that he'll go down as one of the best welterweight fighters of all time. But there's not a doubt either that he will go down. And the question is who's going to be the one to take him down. I think St. Pierre is the next obvious choice, but who knows? That's why they have fights.
Well, it'll be interesting to see what they do with BJ Penn next, and hopefully, you know, we'll see him again in the UFC, and I'd like to see him up against you know, someone like a Diego Sanchez.
Yeah, I would love to see that fight. I would really love to see that fight. And you know, BJ can take it. I think BJ can take it now to whoever he can get up to fight, whoever he wants to fight.
I would love to see him
fight Carl, or I'd love to see him fight Diego as well.
Well, and that's what I hope, is that I hope for him that you know, there have been people, there's been discussions in the past, reports in the past that, you know, when he left the UFC that he gets bored easily of certain situations and wants to try out different things, etc. And I hope that he, you know, stays within the UFC and looks at this and thinks, well, you know, he was very close to beating George St. Pierre, you know, within arguably maybe seconds of submitting Matt Hughes. And there's absolutely no reason that he shouldn't stay around and compete against some of the upper, you know, welterweights that the UFC has. And if he gets some wins, the case can easily be made for a rematch fight with either Hughes or Penn, or sorry, Hughes or St. Pierre. And hopefully, for once, the UFC does that and they build it up first. And they give Jordan St. Pierre a chance to get Matt Hughes. There's already some people talking about having an immediate third fight between the two. And I would like to see the opposite. I you and I have talked about this on the show numerous times. I hope that the UFC builds it up, makes the case even stronger, and then a year and a half from now, we've got, you know, some potential great historical fights ahead for us in the welterweight division.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think it's, to some extent, fight fans don't appreciate that it's a privilege seeing, it's a privilege seeing people fight, and great fighters don't often have to fight. And BJ, it's difficult if you've never been to Hawaii and if you don't actually know a lot of Hawaiians. There's a different mindset there, and you know, BJ comes and lives in a place of great beauty. He has commented often that once he finishes fighting, he'll never teach coach MMA again. That he's loves jiu-jitsu, and he'd just as soon teach jiu-jitsu for the rest of his life. And as odd as it may seem in the sort of materialistic culture, there are people who have different values and enjoy different lifestyles. And maybe, you know, all the money in the world brought up to your front door isn't worth the hassle of being of the fame or celebrity or work or bother. It's it takes to, you know, be a champion in the UFC. So BJ could see, it wouldn't surprise me in the slightest if BJ one day said, that's it, I'm done, and you never hear from him in the MMA scene again.
Well, that was a beautiful speech, and and I can't think of a better note and a more wholesome note to end this show on, the 20th episode of Full Contact Fighter Radio, people, and I'd like to wish you all a good night and the best of luck in the future. All right, Brandon.
Are we done the show now?
Yeah,
Is the series over?
Yeah. No.
Jeez, that felt like the last episode of MASH.
No, hopefully we'll be back for another 20 episodes. And only time. All right, the show's getting really long and tedious. So, Brandon, take care, and we'll talk to you later this week.
Good evening to you, Kelsey.